Imagine, if you can, the USS Enterprise completely made out of Legos. Now imagine it without any Legos. There's nothing there. That's the way we build apps in XAML, too. What do we have if we don't have all the XAML controls? That's what we're talking about today on this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio, XAML Controls with the XAML team. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Daniel Stafford. He's a PM on the XAML team. He owns an entire bushel of XAML controls, and we're going to walk through all the cool things that he's done to bring them over to Windows 10 and what you as a developer can look forward to. Before we start talking about all the nerdy stuff, Daniel, speaking of, let's talk about you. Tell us who you are, when did you join the team, where do you come from?
I'm just a normal guy. I started on the team about 2 years ago, and I've been working with XAML for 8 years now. So I started on the developer side, and now I'm on the actual building the framework side.
Do you have to rewire your brain a little bit when you go from the developer side to the platform side?
Somewhat. I mean, it's actually very helpful coming from the developer side, because you know all of the pain points and the things that just don't work well with the platform. So we've been doing a lot of work to try and ease that pain and to make it so that you can be more productive as a developer.
I've been saying for months now, the bulk of investment that Microsoft's making in XAML is the Windows XAML side of things, right? The Jupyter side, as you call it still internally. And so part of that, obviously, is the framework stuff and all the neat stuff that's there. That's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about some of these controls that are sitting there in the toolbox that developers have. Sometimes they know exactly what to do with them. Sometimes they have no idea because it's not something they're familiar with because they're coming from WPF or something like that. So let's ease through the ones that are that you're responsible for.
All
the
right.
Ones that we can blame you for. okay, let's start with what I think has to be the most iconic control on Windows Phone, right? The one that every time you come into an app, you're like, this feels like a Windows Phone app. And the reason is I'm in the pivot control.
Yes.
So you own the pivot control. So
yes.
For some people don't know what that is. Just give us a hint on what's the intent behind the pivot control?
The intent behind a pivot control is to group together very similar types of data. So it's kind of meant for categorization. Picture, if you will, like an email client where you have several different views on that same data. So, you know, you have your all email list, you have unread, you have flagged, that kind of thing, where it's a lot of categorization of information. Other people use it for different things, but that was our original intention with the control.
Obviously, we're going to talk about this here in just a second, but it feels a little bit like a tab control. So if you're like, I really wonder how I can show all this content but not fill my whole screen at the same time, the pivot control is the one that everybody jumps to. Very iconic. It's a beautiful feel as you kind of flip with your thumb. And a lot of people don't know, and you tell me if you could steal this in Windows 10, that you can data bind all the pivots as well as the content in the individual pivots.
Yeah, so the entire control was actually meant for any sort of dynamic content. So you can actually data bind things, and you can actually even add pivot items or remove pivot items by changing the content that you're data binding to. Mm.
All right, so I have a pivot control in my phone. In Windows Phone 8.1 still had it, but I went over to my my desktop app or my Windows app in Windows 8.1, and I didn't have that option. So I would kind of fake it with the horizontal hub control. You know, it kind of felt kind of like that. Not anymore. Now we have everywhere. Is that right?
Correct. We decided that with Windows 10, we wanted to make sure that all of the great iconic controls that we had on the phone that people really enjoyed using, like Pivot, were available on the desktop as well and everywhere else where XAML is supported.
And are these controls difficult to manipulate on your guys' team when you're like, okay, how are we going to ever get a mouse to work as beautifully as we had a finger swiping it? What are some of the things you guys think through?
The two big things that you have to think through when you're trying to make a universal style control is actually not only the mouse, but also keyboard navigation. So with the pivot control, we were trying to come up with a really great keyboarding scenario so that people who are power users or they're just used to using a keyboard to navigate through an application can use it and it feels natural.
So that means focus has to be handled in a way that's never been handled before, right? Because on the phone, there's no even concept of focus, really.
Exactly. So focus and also even just tabbing and arrow key behavior as well.
And when I resize it on my desktop and it gets bigger and smaller, most of that work that makes it look appropriate is all handled inside your control, right? I get a lot of the benefit out of it.
Yes, and we handle a lot of that internally. And in fact, in Windows 10, we did a lot of work to try and make it so that if you're on a desktop device or even if you're on a phone and the content actually fits within your viewing area, it actually will change the experience. So with Windows 10, the pivot control will actually go from a static to a dynamic headers when the content no longer fits the screen. So the previous behavior in phone was that every time basically the first item is static and then it wraps around. But in Windows 10, yeah, when all of those pivot headers fit on the screen, then it becomes static. So it looks just like tabs essentially at that point.
So I'm here with my 62-inch monitor. And so if I had unread over here, you know, and then I swipe, I have to wait for red to come all the way across the screen in order to even select the one that's after that, right? That's just part of the problem that you're solving with that, right? Once I have that much real estate that I could put every single pivot header on there, you
then
just go
ahead. Then it makes sense to make you wrap all the way around.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, beautiful. And you guys handle accessibility and all the stuff that developers don't have to wrap their heads around, because that's complicated business. As long as they're using it right out of the toolbox, they get a lot of benefit from the first-party controls.
Yes. One of the big things that we do is we work a lot with our accessibility team to make sure that things like the narrator work really well and just automatically handle all of those nitty-gritty details for you.
All right, so that's the pivot control. Before we go on past it, because this is the control that everybody loves, so it's worth spending a little bit of time on it. This is our answer to the tab control. Is that right?
Yes. And in fact, in the Windows 10 experience, you'll notice that there's some areas of the experience where there are tabs. Like, for example, in the Edge browser on the favorites, they have tabs. And that is actually done with the pivot control.
I love it when we talk about all the like core apps and the core experiences in Windows, and we're using XAML the whole time. I love it.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, so I'm a developer. I want to use tabs. I want it to look like that. Is tab equals true, or how do I enable that?
Unfortunately, it's not built into it. So the whole idea with the pivot is that it's just a building block, just like anything else. So to get the tabs experience, you actually do have to do a little bit of work. We have a published sample on the Windows 10 sample site that will show you how to actually change it to look like the tabs in all of our great experiences, like the phone dialer or Edge's favorites selectors.
Nice. Okay, so if I want to make, obviously, the benefit here is my tabs and your tabs aren't going to be identical anymore, right? So
yes,
that it used to be from app to app to app, or from WPF app to WPF app to WPF app. Everybody had the same kind of battleship look to it, and nobody really went in to make it kind of their own kind of look and feel and kind of brand. So this, you're saying, you're going to make it your own look, feel, and brand because you're kind of building from the scratch, not from scratch, from the pivot control up. So you get all the capabilities of what you need, but not the look of what you need until you actually implement your own style.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, and I've done it. I can tell you it's not a crazy ordeal to do. And so it's nice to have that kind of flexibility as well. And, you know, if you had picked it, is tab equals true? You know how many people would have hated it? They would have been, nobody does tabs like that. Why are you making me make my tabs look like those? You know what I mean? They would immediately say, why can't I restyle them? And so it's a perfect solution to the problems.
Well, and not only that, you know, one solution doesn't fit everyone.
No.
We try to do a lot of things, but especially when it comes to a solid brand, we don't want to assume anything.
That's right. Just like Abraham Lincoln said, XAML controls can please most of the people 10% of the time.
Exactly.
I think that's the way it goes. All right, so we got the pivot control. We all love the pivot control. It's all data bound and beautiful. We have, in Windows 8.1, we had the search box, right? Remember that? The search box, we could have an on-canvas search experience that was almost identical to the I don't even know what you call it, on
the search pane
thing that slides in. Search pane experience, right. The search box no longer in the toolbox, replaced by?
Auto-suggest box. So a search box was actually a Windows 8.1 control, and it was very deeply integrated into the search experience and all of the search APIs. As we were going with Windows 10, it just didn't make sense to actually try and shove those into a mobile experience. So we decided to actually take the phone's auto-suggest box as the universal search experience for Windows 10.
How often does the fact I know this control is going to run on a phone play a role in when you're trying to decide a feature kind of requirement of it?
It actually hasn't come across in any other case that I know of except for this one. And the reason that is because most of the time when we build a control, it's not, there's no deep link ties into the OS. It's we try to separate ourselves for very specific reasons.
And now, thanks to AutoSuggest, there are no longer any that have
exactly
ties anymore.
So it's fully desegmented from the OS, and there's no ties.
How do I use it? Is that a combo box as well, or do I use a text box and this control and associate them? How do you implement this?
An AutoSuggest box actually is a text box along with a list view. So you can think of it as basically you have a text box and then a list view that shows selectable items. We think of it as kind of an editable combo box, if you will, but it also can be used for other things, like, for example, a two-line experience in an email application.
Got it. So the good. So that's what I would kind of, it feels like an editable combo box as well when you're kind of in it as well. That's nice. Except for there's no drop-down that lets you pick from every option, or is there?
You can actually filter it however you so choose. So we have a special text changed event in the auto-suggest box where you can actually set the source of the auto-suggest box, and whatever you set it to will actually populate the list view with those items.
Beautiful. All right. Beautiful. All right. So that's the auto-suggest box. The main intent of the auto-suggest box is to replace the search box, but certainly it could be used anywhere else now that you have users typing as well if you want to help them along the way. That's nice. So now we don't have two controls that almost are identical, so that part's good.
And with Windows 10, we also did some work to try and make it so that people who were using Searchbox can actually use AutoSuggestBox and achieve the same experience. So we added a couple new APIs like the query icon and query submitted to cover those scenarios.
Just to keep it so you don't have to go figure out where the icon is and how to place it just right.
Exactly. You would have to retemplate and then keep your own copy of the control and make sure that you do any updates to it. So we tried to handle all of that for you.
Thoughtful. You guys are thoughtful. That's nice. okay, that's cool. All right, Windows 8 comes along, and all of these WPF developers are used to saying messagebox.show, and boom, shows up. And then, of course, we move that cheese, and we have, no, it's not messagebox, it's
message dialog,
right? Dot eight, show async, right? Okay, we kind of got used to that. And now we come across, and we're like, well, remember message dialog? We love it. It's still there. But there's this other thing we want to tell you about because we introduced it on the phone and it was awesome. Now it's going to be across every possible device, and that is the content dialog. Tell me how the content dialog varies from MessageBox even.
So MessageBox is actually a system-driven control. So the intent of that is to actually basically create a modal for the entire system. So anytime you do a message dialog, it'll actually take over any screen that's available. Content dialog was something that we did to make it so that it's only modal for that application. So instead of taking the user's focus away from everything, it only blocks it for that specific application.
Have you ever accidentally written an app that puts a message box in a loop and all of a sudden? Yeah. So that solves that problem, right? So you may write an app that does put a message dialog in a loop. It doesn't mess up the rest of the system. All right.
And the
other important thing
is that message dialog actually only allows you to do strings, whereas content dialog, you can actually put any XAML content that you want inside of there.
Okay, so now with content dialog, I can do things like I can put a checkbox if I need to accept terms. I can put a
radio buttons, whatever you need.
I can put a chart, it's anything. It's just a content control. You can put absolutely anything inside of it, except for another content dialog. I can't put a content dialog. Yeah, the only constraint. And is it? So is this the future? Are we? If I'm a developer, should I start considering every time I think I want a message dialog, I should start using a content dialog instead?
Correct. Yeah. We definitely recommend that people use Content Dialog for pretty much anything that you need a modal dialog for.
Okay. And a message dialog gave me a limit, I think, of two buttons, a primary and secondary button. Or did it? Was it three?
It's two.
Two. And what do I get with Content Dialog?
It's still the same. It's still a primary and a secondary. You can set the text on it, and you can actually do anything you need to inside of the handlers for those buttons to make sure that any work that needs to happen before the dialog closes can actually happen.
And if I'm pulling my hair out for a third button, it's a Content Dialog. I could put anything. I could put a button in there if I was going crazy over it.
Yeah, if you need to, you can actually just, instead of setting the primary and secondary button, you could just put a grid on the bottom and put three buttons inside of there that close the dialog.
Perfect. Yeah, that's nice. Still show async. That part is still the same.
Yes.
And so it's familiar if you were already using message dialog. This is just message dialog on steroids that phone developers had kind of enjoyed for a little while. Now everybody gets to enjoy it. So that part's cool. Is there any downside? Is there any time I shouldn't use a message dialog? A content dialog?
There's no reason really to use a message dialog over a content dialog unless you are doing some sort of thing that needs absolute user interaction. Like, you need to stop whatever they're doing to let them know about something.
Because it's still
for everything else, there's content dialog.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like most developers will start using content dialog, and 1 out of 100 will still be using message dialog for special scenarios.
Hopefully
and
whatever. 1 out of 1,000,000, but
1 out of 1,000,000, right? That's like 4 developers.
Exactly.
For those 4 developers, though, we've got your control.
We still have message dialog.
That's right. It's not being deprecated. Stop saying it is. All right. So that's the content dialog. Let's talk about there has always been, now there has not always been, but there is for a long time now, there's been a way to build a menu, right? So I can have a menu experience. But it hasn't been super duper, you know, with sub items and all this sort of rich experience. And I'm used to actually right clicking and getting a context menu and you know, drilling in. We're all kind of used to that because we're Windows users. Tell me what we've introduced, or not introduced. Tell me what we're doing.
So we have the idea of menu flyout. So the concept with the new XAML platform is that everything is flyouts. Menu flyout is just an automatic thing that we've make it look and feel like a context menu. So we've also introduced the idea of sub-items. So if you've used Windows at any time in the past 20 years,
right,
you know that almost every experience there's you know, these sub-items that allow you to have multiple layers to your context menu. So now you can do that directly in XAML.
Nice. That's what you would want. That's what I want. That's nice. And so I can attach a flyout to a button automatically. It'll place it against that button just the way I tell it to, however it is. But yeah. I can also have a flyout on the fly. I mean, I can kind of have it ad hoc, right? And I could place it wherever I want it to be. So if a user is right-clicking, how do I enable a context menu? It's really what I'm saying. There's not a dot context menu like there is in WinForms.
Or if you want to actually attach it to a button, you simply just put it on the button's flyout property, and it'll actually do everything that you need it to do.
Like a grid? Like if I wanted to put it on a grid, how would I do it?
You can do it two ways. You can either use the flyout basis attached flyout property, or you can actually just manually handle the right tapped or right click and actually just do a show at.
Yeah. They're all good. That's the way everybody's going to do it. Everybody's going to just handle it and show it. It's so easy to do. When you see the demo, all 2 lines of it are pretty straightforward. So it's great. All right. So I think, you know, there's going to be a couple of developers who are looking for the context menu in the toolbox, and they're going to wonder where it is, and they don't know to look for a menu flyout. And so now you've got the menu flyout. What you don't have with the menu flyout, if you're not attaching to a button, is a design time experience, I think. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a huge design time experience for it. There's not a huge need for it, though, because it has a very set design experience. I mean, it doesn't ever change.
Yeah, and just like we talked about with Pivot, I mean, this is totally touch ready. This is totally mouse and keyboard ready. This is accessible ready, and this is HoloLens ready.
Yes.
Oh.
Everything in the XAML control toolkit actually works with HoloLens right out of the box.
Oh my gosh, we all knew it, but it's cool to hear you say it. I mean, there's no getting around it. All right. When we didn't have pivot on the desktop, we used Hub, right? Because the Hub was there, and part of it has been updated so it looks like it's part of Windows 10. But and what has changed about it? Like, what should I be looking for? I'm already familiar with the Hub. What should I be looking for as far as new capabilities that it has?
The only real thing that we've done with Hub, we tried to keep it very similar to the Windows 8 feel so that people who are migrating their apps can still have that same great Hub experience. The big thing that we changed is we actually officially support vertical orientation for Hub now. Previously, it was not exactly working well. It worked, but you had to do a lot of work and make it so that it actually functioned well. But
now I think it defaults to vertical now, too.
It doesn't default to vertical. It still is horizontal by default, but it's all you got to do is change orientation to vertical.
And the see more is there now.
Yes.
I'll do it backwards for
so
you.
So the other big thing that we changed is in the phone, if you had a Hub inside of a Semantic Zoom, the header on the Hub items actually became an invoker of the Semantic Zoom. So whenever you would tap on the header, it would actually invoke the zoomed out view for the Semantic Zoom. We decided that in desktop that actually made sense as well. So we wanted to basically converge those two behaviors and make a new one. However, desktop had this concept of the is header interactive. Mm. So we wanted to make both of those things still possible. In the phone, we actually, if you both have it in a Semantic Zoom and have is header interactive set, there's no way to actually get the section click. So we instead decided to make the is header interactive a little see more link on the actual Hub item header to make it so that you can do both at the same time.
I gotcha. Okay, so it developer could use it for a Semantic Zoom. They don't have to. They can also use it for a drill down kind of action as well to get more.
Well, so if you put a Hub inside of a Semantic Zoom, we automatically make all of the headers of the Hub items clickable, and it will invoke the Semantic Zoom for you.
Okay. Oh, beautiful. Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Okay.
They're really meant to go together. So we wanted to make it so that if you have a Hub that has a lot of different items, you have a great experience that's just kind of built right into the control itself.
So a good little tip would be if you're using a Hub, there's a big chance you should be wrapping it in a Semantic Zoom.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then how do you get to that Semantic Zoom? You tap on one of the headers. So don't wrap it in a Semantic Zoom and hide the headers.
Yes, exactly. So as long as you have the headers in there, and as long as your headers are basically just strings, which is what we recommend anyways, it'll automatically do the work for you.
All right, so here's the Hub PM. This will be nice. And Hub sections are all data templates.
Yes.
I get asked frequently why it's a data template, because, you know, there's some trade-offs for the design experience with data templates.
Yes. There are some definite trade-offs, especially in the name scoping. Anything that's inside of a data template, you can't get at the name scope of it. But we did it for a very specific reason, actually. It was largely for performance reasons. If it's not inside of a data template, we actually try to create all of those Hub items, and they're all just shown. So any of the UI elements you have on any of your Hub items would all get created, which is super expensive. So we put it inside of data templates to make it so that it can virtualize very easily. In fact, most of the time it won't even create it until you're one pivot item or one Hub item away. So basically, as you're scrolling, it'll automatically virtualize those things for you.
You know, it's a hard pill to swallow for developers to trade off a developer experience for user experience.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And often, to increase user experience, often the developer experience is a little bit more sophisticated. You know, you're going to have to figure out how to use XPhase and all these other things that you don't want to have to use because it's so much easier not to. But the user experience goes through the roof, and it's so much valuable. And like, what is it really separates your app from one of those really high-end apps in the store? Probably the developer put the elbow grease into it, and this is one of those places, right? It's just the way it works.
Yes, and it was one thing that we decided that the user experience on this, especially due to the fact that it's such a signature Windows control, the user experience is very important to us. So we decided to do this little trade-off to make it so that everyone who uses it still at least gets a good experience.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the last one in our list here, the scroll viewer. We've all had the scroll viewer, and man alive, does that come up a lot, especially on things like Stack Overflow. They're like, well, how do I add scroll bars to things? You have to wrap it in a scroll viewer. You know, that's just one of those concepts around XAML that's always been true, and, you know, it's been a tricky thing. That hasn't changed at all. What has changed is...
we did a little bit of visual updates to make sure that the scroll viewer actually looks and feels just like the rest of Windows 10. That was the really the only major change we've made.
That's it. It's the same control as it was before. Yeah.
Yes.
It still has that cool feature that a lot of developers don't know about until they run their app for the first time and mistakenly pinch zoom, and that it will zoom any content for you automatically. It's
yes.
Awesome. Like how to that's
you
another
can disable thing. That as well if it yeah, doesn't but, suit your needs.
It's enabled by default just to kind of wake you up a little bit in case you're not if you're wondering if you're testing your app
that we've been talking about changing with scroll viewer, but we just didn't feel like it was worth the trade-off because a lot of developers have used it enough now that they know at least what to expect with the scroll viewer. So we wanted to make sure that for those developers the experience is still consistent in Windows 10.
And are you going to introduce an X scroll viewer that can only scroll at compile time?
Only
no, I'm just kidding. It didn't make any sense at all. I'm only kidding. okay, so here's the beautiful part of the story, right? I can go from if all the stuff I learned in phone, which was terrific, right? Bring it all over. All the stuff I learned in desktop, bring that back to the phone. There's no boundaries at all. We don't have to have any kind of like caveat story of, yeah, unless you're on the phone, right? That's beautiful
yes.
how that's happened. And if it doesn't look right, we could still retemplate these things to death all that we want to, right? Dot template everything if you want to. Except I think it's worth you backing me on this when I say be careful when you retemplate, especially around concepts of accessibility. You can really unwire all the hard work that your team's put into putting in focus and putting in all the different pieces that suddenly you've made it less optimal.
Yes, there's two big reasons to really be wary of retemplating a whole lot. Partly it's because of accessibility reasons. We've seen a lot of people accidentally remove accessibility properties or change them to properties that they didn't anticipate. So users that are trying to use your app that maybe, you know, are visually impaired or, you know, other disabilities, they may have problems actually trying to navigate your application. So that's one big reason. And the other big reason is it's actually a performance hit. So anytime you're retemplating a control, we have to basically load that whole new template. And anytime that you can basically just use the stuff that's in generic.xaml, it'll greatly benefit you. If you do need to, however, there is some performance benefits to putting it in your app.xaml as opposed to putting it in your page or user control resources.
Well, there's a heck of a tip right there. I mean, we're talking milliseconds, I'm sure, but nonetheless, it could be a big deal to some apps.
Real quick.
Yeah. It's funny, there's a threshold, you know, where, no pun intended, right, where you're moving along and your app, you could care less about performance because everything's fine. And then all of a sudden you like cross that line and you're like, what just happened? Oh, you have to rethink everything. Everything matters all of a sudden where you didn't care of the fact that you had 15 layers in your control that you weren't really using. Now all of a sudden you're trimming them down because you've crossed that line of too many records, too large of a tree. I mean, whatever it is, right? Everybody, not every developer hits that. Really, prime time, sometimes line of business applications will hit it for sure. And sometimes they're, or in the past, it's been a difficult story to have with them. We're like, yeah, that's a bad deal. Now that's a bad deal. We have about 85 solutions for you can think about now. So it's a great story around performance. No doubt, in no small part because Windows is using XAML now and they don't put up with slow.
we have to make sure that we can scale from phone to desktop to Xbox, and we have to be able to, you know, run on any device that anyone has bought or will buy. So we try to take these things into consideration. We try to make it as performant as possible.
Beautiful. Thanks, Daniel. I appreciate you being on the show. Developers that are watching and thinking about XAML right now, inside your toolbox that comes free, by the way, with your free version of Visual Studio 2015 community, you have a whole slew of beautiful controls. Today, we only talked about five. We only talked about Pivot, Hub, Scroll Viewer, menu, fly out, and what was the other one? What was the fifth one? Content dialogue, right? Yeah. Some of them are some of them conceptually are great ideas that every XAML developer has had before. Some of them are special just to this modern development that we're going into now. They're all there. They're all ready to go. Plenty of samples up on GitHub now that almost you could look at. You could see every control implemented now up in GitHub. It's beautiful. Daniel, thanks for being on the show and talking to me about those controls.
Thank you.
See you again.
See ya.